I could have, we've got, 22 minutes, I guess, to have a general discussion on this afternoon's talk, and this morning's talk, and even some of yesterday's talk, on both observations of Terry and Jim, and the both of your talking about this place. One thing I guess I wanted to start this off by saying, and you've heard, especially from Elliot and Charles, that, you know, that this theory is very difficult, and good luck in getting the observations to constrain this theory as to what's really going on in the inmost parts of the flow.
I said it would be hard to predict.
Well, okay. Well, but let me, the reason why accretion flow theorists are interested in the Galactic Center, I mean, there are a whole bunch of reasons, of course, why the Galactic Center is interesting, but because it's the one place where we can actually start to do some imaging. And with imaging, maybe we could really see what's going on. Imagine seeing the solar flares in the sun, but in the Galactic Center. So the one talk that was missing from this conference was by Jeff Ballard because he got sick, where it was just, you all know that there's this claim that Saturday star has been dissolved, and Jim Moran wanted to start this discussion as to whether in fact that has been observed, and Hino here is prepared to defend Jeff's honor, we'll start the discussion on those lines, but I also want to bring it back to theory eventually and see whether we can in fact listen to the theory.
Hino, do you want to show us, can you show us the data to make the case for the image, the radio image to be resolved? While you're doing that, maybe I could ask for that. If the image is resolved, what does that mean in the simulation of the gathering of the black hole? And the whole radio world is gearing up to this fantastic field of the atmosphere. Already elongated at 1 millimeter. That structure going to obscure the data inner part?
No, there is radiating gas in the vicinity of the black hole. So when you see the text, assuming that the relative is right and the theoretical content is right and all that stuff. So yes, it will be attacked. And I don't think it will be counted. It won't be on the same because the event horizon is on the tail of the larger wave of the bucket.
What is the interest in seeing a shadow that's 5 kilometers radio?
Sorry?
Well, maybe because we could reorient NASA funding away from Mars and towards science again. Oops, sorry, I didn't mean to say that. Am I being recorded?
No, it's essentially, I mean, as I said, it's a self-lensed image of the event horizon. So the discussion with Ramesh was more about sort of a 10% effect. If you have a sphere which is 10% larger than the event horizon, but absorbs, okay, can you distinguish this? And not certainly not with the first few BI images. So if you have something which is 10% larger, still absorbs, no, you probably won't be able to distinguish this. But I, you know, with time going by and having better images, I'm pretty sure you can really nail it down maybe to 1%, maybe then 10 to the minus 2, I don't know. Do we ever get to 100% certainty? Probably not. I mean, if that's the point, then okay. But then I guess it's more a philosophical argument. And the question why it's optically thin, it really comes from the fact that, you know, the inverted spectra are typically a sign of self-absorption. And then in Saturday star, we know we have the upper limit here, we have the peak in the submillimeter, and so it has to become optically thin at that frequency. I think we all agree on this. So it's going to happen somewhere here. And we've seen some, you know, these submillimeter measurements yesterday, and this might have been sort of, it's variable, so sometimes it may be optically thin, sometimes maybe optically thick. But, you know, just have to be lucky, you have to observe often enough. And Saturday star has been observed to death already at under the telescope, so I think that's the issue. And there's a question of size. So this is sort of here, well, this is a, that was the theory, and that was sort of the measurements. And so this is here, the intrinsic size measurement of a 7 millimeter, 3 millimeter. Now this is the old Dolman point. And this is the point by Shen et al. And that was the question. They essentially the one sigma error bars touch. And the question is, now, is this a difference? Now, first of all, we do have variability. For example, here these are six epochs averaged together. Not just one observation. This is one observation. This is essentially one observation of six. And one of these epochs, we actually see a significant expansion of the size. Okay. So that may well happen here as well. And secondly, now this was done, all the three points were done exactly with the same technique, which was developed by Shep and Jeff together, and done in exactly the same way using closure amplitude analysis. So that means, which is rather independent of calibration error. And I think that's why Shep developed it. And finally, now this was done with 8 LBS, and this was done with 6. And so doesn't mean it's not be better, but we have significantly more data. I mean, just having one or two more antennas gives you better, smaller error bar, which actually is seen here. And finally, and when this point was derived, you have to subtract the scattering law. Okay, you have the scattering ellipse, and then you subtract the scattering size from this, and that means you have to calibrate the scattering law of Sagittarius A star quite well. What was done in this paper here, and also done here, coming to a similar result, was that the size of Sagittarius star, also the lower frequencies, was evaluated also using closure amplitude. Okay, so the scattering law changed slightly between here and here, and that gives sort of those results. So that is the that's maybe the debate here. I don't think there's a real debate because it's a one sigma separation. So.
Can you step back and explain what the scattering? Maybe. Have you taken out the scattering?
Okay, now then I have to go to Jeff's talk, which is. If you didn't.
No, please feel free to interrupt me. This is your discussion.
Well, it's not my talk, right? So you, you're really free to.
We don't have another talk.
I mean, maybe you and Jim should talk about this.
Sorry?
Maybe you and Jim should talk about this separately.
And, okay, well, that's not.
Yeah, we'll
get
into more.
No, I mean, you asked. I mean, this is
no,
how.
We did ask you.
This is the data that Jeff shows. Closure amplitude sizes of Sagittarius A star divided by a lambda square law. Okay? And you see here, this is evaluated at low frequencies, 6 centimeter, 2 centimeter. And you see it's sort of here, it's fairly consistent with the lambda square law. And then here, it's no longer consistent with the lambda square law. This is a 1 millimeter point, which has a huge error bar, which sort of doesn't tell you anything. But it sort of confuses the picture. So it's really, you cannot fit this with the lambda square law.
But I guess the question is, that's 1.05.
Yes.
That means that your measure
again, you cannot do it with a single epoch and just fitting in the image plane because you have the calibration uncertainties. But if you do the closure amplitude, it's very sensitive because it's essentially all the calibration errors, except for bias, but that's the one you fit, it cancels. It's like closure phases, which is a very reliable measure of structure. And there it can really go to very sensitive measurements of but you know, Shep may disagree. And Shep should be here, right? Shen's data point comes about here. Now, well, It was consistent with sort of the old scattering law, but then we said, okay, let's look at all the data in the same manner, because the size of Sagittarius A star, you get slightly different sizes if you do sort of fitting in the image plane or do closure amplitude analysis. So you better do all frequencies with one method. You don't combine two different methods. And so we redid this, and then Jeff came about and said, I have a problem. Can we change the scattering law from, you know, either go to 1.98, or I can't just fit it with lambda squared. And I said, you know, why don't we think about intrinsic sizes, right? And lambda squared just wasn't possible to fit. If you fit everything in one
little query, you zipped through it. I think the previous slide here, which shows the total size.
No, this here. Yeah, but that's the old one. Is that the old low? That's the old low plot.
We can judge how we can fiddle with the scattering law. Well, one final question I have is: does this position angle mean something? Could that be the axis?
No, this position angle is the position angle of the scattering ellipse, essentially. And then you can wonder whether the change in polarization angle is, but that is the one sigma. And so that would indicate some intrinsic misalignment between the intrinsic ellipse and the scattering ellipse. But that's really fishing in the noise. Yeah, this is actually multiple epochs, and we did and it's a lot of Monte Carlo simulation that we did in order to check the
organizers are sort of getting angry with me about this discussion, and I
for the non-conscious sentient, what does it mean for informal polar people around you? We don't know what you're.
Well, we don't know what the size of the emitting region is. Now, that's the first time we measure the intrinsic size, and that really puts stringent limits on what the what that is.
You resolve it. You resolve it at long wavelength. You only resolve the scattering.
Right.
If you go to the wavelength, you start placing the intrinsic size. You deviate from the scattering.
And the holy grail has always been to see something very different, going away from the lambda square law.
Yeah, the idea is that ultimately we're going to get to the point where we're going to be able to see the shadow of the
Yes,
hole, right?
And that's the... Yes. And if you go to the... somewhere around here, the scattering size and
okay,
the...
Now all three of them are really staring at me. Even the observer is staring at me.
Okay. You just asked. You got your answer.
No, I'm glad we found this on the phone. But because they're staring at me and getting angry with me, they're going to have to start chiming in themselves. So Elliot and Charles, when we do have an image of the shadow of the black hole, despite Andy's... comment that who cares? I mean, do we care?
My comment about caring is that it was five different data. I don't have to shoot a shadow of black hole. It's three shadows.
No, that's
where GR tells you.
That's exactly what GR gives you.
Right?
You can't see down to the event horizon because you have a lens before you, which is a black hole. Right?
So that's three dimensions. So is there any way of learning about what's going on in the very innermost parts of the flow and where the flow is turning into an outflow, the flow is turning into an outflow from these other, are there any predictions of the theories of one day in preparation for this dramatic graph?
Sure.
Suppose you actually make it many images, right? And you see drop. And you see the way the drop move. Sure, you can tell whether the drop is going round and falling in, or whether it's being picked out as a jet, right? But in principle, sure, you can tell a concept. But you're not going to let the drop or not, right? That you have that line of anything. So it really is, proper motion.
And are you going to be able to get closer to the stack?
Synchrotron.
You can measure Doppler effects. I mean, these are other models where you have spin changing, and the reason why this is so much brighter is because of Doppler beaming of one side, and that gives you that tells you that this here is almost close to the speed of light and that this is a sort of a significant spin. In this case, you have the outflow as well. Then you have beaming, you know, you have beaming in this direction and beaming while you go up. And so you amplify a certain, or better here, you amplify a quarter. And so you get quite a bit of information about what's going on in Doppler factors and so forth. Of course, you have to average a little bit over a certain time. I hope so at some point.
Just a comment about the predictiveness of the simulations. I mean, we saw very different physics, it looked like, in the simulation that Chris described versus what Charles described in terms of the overall dynamics of the accretion flow. And it's quite possible that all of that is real, namely that depending on the boundary, the true boundary conditions of the problem, the angular momentum distribution of inflowing gas, the magnetic field in the inflowing gas, that may lead to different dynamics on the inside. It's not obvious that you have to lose memory of those initial conditions or boundary conditions at large radii. And I think this is something that would clearly be interesting to explore more in the calculations, namely, how do the results in terms of the dynamics on smaller scales depend on what the net, you know, what the magnetic field is at larger radii, exactly what the angular momentum distribution is at large radii, and those kinds of properties as well.
Certainly, if you think of instruments, and what you really would like to have is a very sensitive submillimeter with the IRA with a couple of telescopes and a mid-infrared interferometer with this good imaging capability and observe together. And I think quite spectacular. You get as close to a black hole as you could ever have dreamed before.
And when is this going to happen?
Well, it depends on how much money we left after you've gone to the moon and to Mars.
That's what was shown before, what you're going to see. If you're
talking about space-based
that's convolved with risk gathering and Earth-based ground resolution. Just the only problem is this wavelength, which is 0.6 millimeters, which is just tough to calibrate because of the atmosphere. Around here. I mean, this feature is stable because this depends on the R. And it changes a little bit, like 10% with the spin. But that's something we definitely want to see. It has to be time variable. I think that's why you're not going to make just 1 hour observation. You have to do many observations. And we talked about, there are actually interesting ideas, like, Jeff just proposed over coffee that, you know what the orbital timescale is, and you can sort of fold that in. And so if there's a structure which comes every couple of minutes, you can put this into your model and fit this as well. People have done that with the magnitude of Jupiter, which rotates. You get actually a 3D image. Actually, it's good. It's actually, once you have those methods, you can probably get a 3D picture of it.
As far as imaging the shadow is concerned, I think that's a neat idea, but I think what Jeff was saying is that only on that analysis of the observations, a heck of a lot more you can get out of it. You're imaging the inner accretion flow, which
always
imaging the horizon. So well, I think it's a great idea, but there's a lot of people fear that.
I mean, depending on exactly what the temperature and density distribution is, there's always the unsettling possibility that the emission is dominated by 6 Schwarzschild radii gas, in which case you see no GR effect, and what you learn is entirely about MHD and plasma systems around the black hole. Sure, of course, yeah.
The only thing that some of this can get stuck into a black hole is still the main reason, but we have some low surface pressure.
Yeah, it's an issue of where does emissivity peak? Is it R to minus 2? Exactly what the emissivity profile is?
It won't be
that
simple.
Andrea Gatz and Elliot Potter for organizing a Galactic Center conference finally at the KITP, which has been an area of astrophysics that's been too long and black hole. It's very one of the most exciting areas. I should point out that other people at the KITP have noticed, and they've seen a lot of programs here. There's so many young people at this particular conference compared to conferences that other conferences that have been held here. So clearly this is one of the most exciting areas in physics. Never mind just astrophysics. So let's thank them all again. And I would like to invite them up to say a couple of words. And let me see if I can.
Details, it makes the science much more appealing, and I think we owe them a great return.
Thank you.